We're excited to announce that our very own podcasting platform, Zencastr, has become a new sponsor to the show. Check out the podcast discount link in our show notes and stay tuned for why we love using Zen for the podcast.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, Chris Webster here. This episode was recorded live on the radio at 95.1 FM Carson Community Media in Carson City, Nevada. So you hear stuff about calling in with questions. Just ignore that, and when you can, tune in to www.knvc.org/listen-live at noon Pacific on Fridays to participate in the live show. You're listening to the Archaeology Show with Chris Webster on KNVC 95.1 FM Carson Community Media in Carson City, Nevada, and online at knvc.org/listen-live. Welcome to the show. Hello, listeners and fans of archaeology. I'm your host for the next hour, Chris Webster. I'm a contract archaeologist in a field we call cultural resources management, and I also run the Archaeology Podcast Network. We have lots of shows about archaeology. You can find them all at www.archpodnet.com. And that's A-R-C-H, not A-R-C, not A-R-C-K, A-R-C-H, podnet, as in Archaeology Podcast Network. Today I've got Brian Woods back in the studio to discuss various topics in archaeology. Welcome, Brian. I don't know if Brian's even on. He's probably on the wrong microphone. Let's get Brian on the right microphone, and then we'll keep on talking with this.
Yes.
Hey, there we go.
Hello, I am here.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. Yes. Okay. All right, so while you're listening, remember that this is first and foremost a call-in show. We're going to discuss a number of topics today, but I want you to know this is, as I said, a call-in show. So if you've got any questions about archaeology, something that's on your mind, something about history, just call in at 775-515-4141. You can also tweet Archeowebby, A-R-C-H-E-O-W-E-B-B-Y, or at ArcPodNet on Twitter. You can also email me, chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. This is, as I said, a call-in show. If you're my goal with this show is to talk to people about archaeology and spread the word about archaeology. I feel like a televangelist or something like that. But you know, there's a lot of similarities there.
You can't use the phrase "spread the word" without immediately conjuring that image.
We can no longer spread words or make things great again.
No,
they're all ruined.
Yep.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, anyway, so call in 775-515-4141. As I said, I'm always talking about archaeology. I love presenting archaeology in different ways to people. I love just talking about it. And case in point, when I come to this radio show on Fridays, I usually go down to David Wally's Hot Springs and have a little soak in a steam and maybe do some work out there before I come to the show. My wife and I have a membership out there, so I figured, why not? It's a good time to go down. And just as I'm about to think about leaving one of the hot spring hot tubs down there, I start talking to this woman who was sitting in the hot tub and mentioned that I was an archaeologist, because she's like, what are you doing? And, you know, it just comes up. And people usually assume that you're out of town because a lot of people vacation there.
Sure.
Turns out her and I were sitting there. We're both from the area. You know, she lives in Gardnerville, I live in Reno. But we started talking about her actual side research into fertility figurines, and like everybody's probably seen the old Venus figurine with mm-hmm. the large breasts and large hips mm-hmm. thought to imbue like future fertility in women. Sure. And I had to appreciate her. You know, she's not a scientist by training per se, but she had a very scientific approach to how she was looking at this issue and what do people – what in her mind do people really use these figurines for? And she had a very unique way of thinking about it. And that's the kind of thought I like to get people thinking about. Somebody may not be right. Somebody may not be wrong. We might not ever know if somebody's right.
Sure.
And that's the whole thing.
Sure. How can we ask?
How can we ask?
Right.
And that's what I said. I said, archaeologists are, you know, we're consumed with looking at things and digging things up and analyzing things. But it's all to add pieces to the puzzle and answer that question. And sometimes we find a puzzle piece that changes the entire image. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a different image than we thought we were making. And we have to acknowledge that and move on and help tell that new story now.
Right.
So,
well, and so it's interesting that you mentioned that, because of the story that we read and are probably about to speak about with the artifacts in Israel and how people are retelling a story based on what they're finding.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going into it, it seems, with they've already got their their answer, and mm-hmm. they're just looking clues to fill in that answer, whether or not that's true or not. And so on my way here, I was thinking, it's odd to me to think of a strict religious archaeologist the same way it's hard for me to picture a strictly religious scientist.
Right.
Like, how do you approach any true knowledge when you have that hardcore background ideology guiding you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you actually approach it? I don't know. I don't think that I could. If I had a strong enough belief, that would just taint everything that I did.
Sure.
And so,
well, and that happens. Mm-hmm. You know, that happens in academia, where somebody spent their entire career studying something, and they studied it thinking one thing, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden somebody else comes along, or maybe they themselves discover something, but somebody else comes along usually. And often it's another student or graduate student or somebody else coming up in the field. And they find something that completely changes everything you thought you know about the things you studied for the last 30 years, maybe wrote a few books about, presented out at colleges, at conferences, I should say. And it becomes, unfortunately, academia is taken out of it. Scientific thought is taken out of it. And pride and other things are put back in. And you're like, well, I've studied this for the last 30 years of my life or 40 years of my life. I can't possibly be wrong, can I? That invalidates my entire existence. But I look at it as it's all part of science. You added to the story, and if anything, you created a story that somebody else wanted to come and research, and they found more pieces to that and changed it or did something. So,
well, and there was a slightly different, but an example of what you're talking about just recently, maybe a week or two ago, where an author had written a book, and she had studied and spent all this time writing this book, and she goes on the air to talk about it, and it's about, I believe, British law.
Yeah.
She goes on the air to talk about it. The person interviewing her destroys her book in like one sentence. And he's like, actually, you're misinterpreting that law. And she based her entire book on that law and gathered all this research to support her point, which is what you do when you write a book.
Right.
But she started off wrong from the beginning. And imagine the amount of years or whatnot she spent doing all this and just going, oh, look at this. I'm finding more clues. Oh, it's all adding up.
Yeah.
And then come to find out, it's all adding up to something, but not a correct premise, right? or a correct conclusion.
Yeah. Well, along these lines, we'll swap the way I wanted to talk about these things a little bit because you brought it up, which is totally fine. The article that I actually found and sent to Brian just, I think, last night or this morning or something, was archaeological warfare is getting in the way of peace. So if you want to find that, just Google that. I'm not actually sure about the sources for this article. It's by a publication called Forward, and I found it on Apple News in my archaeology topic that I save. And it just says Array, A-R-R-A-Y. What is Array? Is that some kind of AI up in space that's creating things, right?
Perhaps.
Anyway, they're talking about Israel, Jerusalem, that whole area. And the basic thrust of the article is there's actually people out there that are doing archaeology in support of their position, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, the one of the biggest points of contention in Israel is between Israel and Palestine and who has the right to what land, right? And the land that they do have current possession of, it's just littered with archaeological sites, artifacts, and things like that. And they're trying to find things that support what they believe is true. And they may be finding things that don't support what they believe is true. And are they telling anybody about those things? Probably not. But that's where archaeological warfare and that phrase is coming in. And people have used archaeology and history to support support their own theories throughout time. I mean, as long as we've been doing archaeology. So... But if that were true, like I also read an article that I didn't send you where a bust of when they think it was the rest of a statue was there too at some point, but it was destroyed. But it was just the head basically of the god god of wine, Dionysus or Bacchus, depending on if you're Greek or Roman. And but it was used as building material. Like it was just like in a wall.
Just a filler.
Right.
Just basically. Grab that, put it in there.
Stick that head in there. That'll be good. Now I don't know what people were thinking when they did that, but the funny thing is, you know, stuff is important in one culture and then it's not important at another time frame. They must have known that that was like a Greek or Roman god, right? Mm-hmm. My question is, how do we know that? Because do they have a particular look that people were going from? I know they usually do, like Zeus is always pictured with a big beard and stuff like that. But when you get into the younger women and men, if you just have a head and you don't have the rest of their body to say, oh, well, he's got, you know, flaming shoes on or something like that. You know, what are the tells to say this is actually the god Dionysus or Bacchus? I have no idea.
And then meanwhile, whoever did this excavation, they go, they start, you know, doing whatever they do, if they do non-destructive inspection or whatever. But whatever they're doing, and they're like, oh, my God, there's a wall. There's a head in the wall. Oh, yeah, that's so back in the day, that's what they would do. They would get their head of their favorite god, put it in the wall, seal it up, and it would, like, you know, protect the house from evil spirits or something. Yeah. Meanwhile, we're just making up nonsense.
I know. Right?
And it was just like some lazy dude. And he thought the whole house was clean. He was getting, and he's like, oh, dang it. And he just shoved it in there, plastered over it, and that was it. And here we make some big, you know, cool story about it. Probably not.
Right. Oh, it's always ritual. Mm. Like archaeologists default to ritual.
Sure.
If you don't know what it was, ritual.
Sure.
And that's one thing I was telling the woman I met this morning is, and I actually didn't actually say that in those particular terms, and I really should have, but what I tried to tell her was as my own personal feelings as an archaeologist, anytime I see anything, my first assumption is that it's common. Mm-hmm. Even if I've never seen one before, even if I've never read about one before, I'm just going to assume that it's common, because what are the chances I found something rare?
Right.
You know, and rare could just mean we don't have a lot of examples of it. Mm-hmm. You know, the farther you go back in time, the more rare something might be. Like, for example, reed sandals are rare in Nevada. They're rare because the desert eats them, right? So, but when we find them in caves, they're rare from the standpoint of it's a rare artifact, but there were literally millions of them at the time.
They're just shoes.
They're just shoes.
Yeah, yeah, so exactly. You find a bottle and you're like, oh, it's amazing. And you're like, this is a landfill, right? Like,
yeah.
And so, okay, question then, again, pretend we exist as a species 400 or 500 years, 1,000 years from now. What are our rituals? Like, people are going to find our remotes and they're like, oh, they used to do this to summon their electronic gods of cable TV or
right.
Aside from churches, like, do we even, like, what, soccer stadiums, like sports? Like,
I mean, anywhere where you're gathering a ton of people is probably going to be seen as ritual to another society. But that being said, it depends on what's survived, because we look at the Colosseum in Rome, and we're not saying that's ritual because we know what happened there.
Right.
You know, we have records of what happened there. But if you go back, and if we didn't have those records and we had like one example of a Colosseum like thing from maybe 4,000 years ago, we might assume some sacrifice or ritual. Take the Maya, for example. Mm-hmm. You look at their pyramids and we're like, well, that's and we do have some evidence of this because you can find residue analysis and things like that. But some of the first assumptions about things that would take place on the tops of these pyramids in certain areas was ritual sacrifice.
Right.
Right. It's always ritual. In that case, it turned out to mostly be proven by evidence. Right. Mm-hmm. But
so they were doing that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. That was a cool story. I didn't know. Like, debunked. It's like, oh, yeah. Don't ruin this.
Don't ruin it. Don't ruin it. Yeah. So we always, I mean, we like to say ritual because we don't understand it, which is really odd to me, because when you go back to any time period before, like, the Industrial Revolution, there were more things that were difficult to understand by cultures, you know, whether it's weather and lightning or, you know, how do the tides work, you know, something like that. You know, you go back to any time period in the past before we were able to actually scientifically explain those things. And often the explanation was it was a god or some sort of, you know, some sort of religious thing. Right. And that's just common throughout all cultures. Anytime you don't understand something, you're going to assume that it's not understandable to you. Right. Until you do understand it and you figure it out. Which is probably what's made me a huge cynic. But anyway, because I always just assume if I don't understand it now, then it's just not the right time. Like, we'll figure it out eventually, right? So it makes it hard to figure out, well, what is stuff that we actually can't understand? But anyway, I'm getting off track. What I mean is, some people make fun of those people in the past, and they say, oh, those stupid Romans, Zeus didn't create lightning, you know? Weather and static electricity did. But now we look at stuff as scientists and we say, oh, well, that's clearly ritual because we don't understand it. You know, but how are we supposed to understand the minds of people that lived 2,000 years ago?
Sure.
You know, we can try. We can assume based on the things that they left behind. But another thing I told that woman I was talking to this morning is we record trash. Mm-hmm. We record the things that people left behind intentionally. You know, maybe they've dropped it or forgot it or something, but usually these are things that were intentionally left behind. Now, unless you find it as part of grave goods or something like Pompeii, which has been, you know, buried in the moment, then you have to assume it's common, mm-hmm. and you can't assume it's always ritual, unless there are some other extenuating circumstances, and that says that it's, you know, something could be more ritualistic based on other evidence. Let's go back to the fertility figurines. Mm-hmm. A lot of people assign that to ritual and saying, oh, let's have some kind of ceremony with these fertility figurines to make a woman more fertile so she can get pregnant, right? Mm-hmm. Because pregnancy throughout time has always been somewhat of a mysterious and magical sort of event, right?
Well, and extremely important.
Well, I mean, without it, we wouldn't be here talking today.
I'm saying, yeah, but I mean, growing your tribe or growing your community, sure. was probably priority number two.
Yeah.
Aside from finding food.
Right.
And not getting, well, secure, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, fertility is of utmost importance. I mean, the name of the game is to be the biggest tribe ever.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, people want to expand. They want to, grow. And I mean, the original corporations were tribes, right? Mm-hmm. That's a bad thing to say. Anyway, so one of the things that she brought up was that, you know, maybe this wasn't so much strictly ritual. At least this is how I interpreted it. Maybe it wasn't so much strictly ritual in the sense that ritual's a loaded term, that there's a lot. It says that there's a lot we don't know about it, mm-hmm. when you say ritual. We just don't understand, because one person's ritual is another person's, you know, just way of doing things, right?
Right.
And so I like the thought of thinking about these figurines and these things almost more partly ritual, but partly tools, mm-hmm. and to help the woman visualize, or to physically help the woman, you know, in the pregnancy, something like that. I don't know. I don't really know. And I don't think we'll ever know. Mm-hmm. You know, we can try, like we do experimental archaeology all the time, where we say, you know, did these projectile points really fly straight through the air, and were they able to kill things? People have actually done that. Mm. So we've been able to prove that, yes, used in this way, those things can happen. You know, we have to go with other resources to say, did they actually use them in that way? Like rock art. We mm-hmm. see depictions of animal kills in rock art, things like that. So I don't know. It's all crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, archaeological warfare. Let's go back to that article a little bit. I'd like to see, just thinking from a pure philosophical standpoint, or maybe an experimental standpoint, what we think, like going back to what you said, you know, what are going to be the things that we use to justify our existence, you know, later on in the future, mm-hmm. When we're, you know, maybe we destroy this planet and we leave and we come back maybe. In 1,000 years. Well, when we destroy the planet.
You mean like two yeah. generations from now?
Right. And then people actually leave. And then their descendants come back in, say, 1,000 years and try to figure it all out. Maybe the records were lost in a fire. You know, mm-hmm. they don't really know anything about the people that were left here.
All electronic data has been wiped out by a solar flare.
Something's gone.
So yeah. The only thing left is Mount Rushmore, the pyramids, right? Anything in granite.
Yeah.
But everything paper, that's gone.
Right? Yeah.
All your electronic media, anything magnetic, gone.
Sure.
So... it's not going to be a whole lot. They're going to have to make a lot of assumptions, huh?
A lot of assumptions. You know, and how do you do that?
They're going to find fidget spinners. And we're like, oh, man, they used to get together in a circle and spin these things around and pray for global warming to end.
Right. Right. Oh, my God. Yeah. I imagine, you know, we look at the pyramids as an example and we say, okay, this is a tomb for a pharaoh. Mm. And, you know, we have these big things. And then around the pyramids, you find often buried the structures and homes of the people who built the pyramids, mm-hmm. right? Because it took mm-hmm. decades to build these things. I'm wondering if around like a huge stadium in a big mm-hmm. city, you know, the ruins of the stadium, and then you've got housing developments all around that, will somebody come to this planet and think, oh, those must have been the workers that helped build this monumental mm-hmm. thing, you know? Or will there be enough technology of it left behind to know that it was mechanical technology that helped mm-hmm. put it together? I mean, people think mechanical technology put the pyramids together. Some do, you know?
Well, it was at its base.
mechanical in a sense of tools and things right. like that, but there weren't spaceships lifting blocks into the air.
Come on. There's yeah. a whole show about it. Don't tell me that aliens it must be
true.
Into it.
Must be true. Yeah. So, listen, to put the alien thing to bed, I am a scientist. I never say 100% one way or the other unless it's an actual law of science, right? So I'm not going to say aliens haven't visited this planet. I just don't think they've had a lot of influence on this planet. Mm. And if they have, there's either no evidence for it or it was so little that, you know, if it were a great influence, we would have more evidence of that. Sure. You know, they wouldn't have left behind literally nothing. You know, I just don't see people cleaning up that well. I don't care who they are. Aliens, whatever. people are people, you know, even if they're not people. And I just don't feel like they'd clean up that well after themselves.
You never know. I mean, they could be a 3 billion-year-old civilization. They got that thing perfected.
They might. They might. Well, then what were they here to begin with? Helping us build pyramids. Why do they care?
Science project.
Science project. Yeah, that's
right. They just terraformed the planet and kept going.
Just moved on. Yeah. Moved on. Nice. Nice.
Chris Webster here for the Archaeology Podcast Network. We strive for high-quality interviews and content so you can find information on any topic in archaeology from around the world. One way we do that is by recording interviews with our hosts and guests located in many parts of the world all at once. We do that through the use of Zencastr. That's Z-E-N-C-A-S-T-R. Zencastr allows us to record high-quality audio with no stress on the guest. Just send them a link to click on and that's it. Zencastr does the rest. They even do automatic transcriptions. Check out the link in the show notes for 30% off your first 3 months, or go to zencastr.com and use the code TAS. Looking to expand your knowledge of x-rays and imaging in the archaeology field? Then check out An Introduction to Paleoradiography, a short online course offering professional training for archaeologists and affiliated disciplines. Created by archaeologist, radiographer, and lecturer James Elliott, the content of this course is based upon his research and teaching experience in higher education. It is approved by the Chartered Institute for Archaeologists as 4 hours of training. That's in the UK, for those of you that don't know. So don't miss out on this exciting opportunity for professional and personal development. For more information on pricing and course structure, visit paleoimaging.com. That's P-A-L-E-O imaging.com. And look for the link in the show notes to this episode.
Well, let's talk about cultural appropriation. And a mutual friend of ours, actually, I don't know if you're still friends with him or not, but a mutual friend of ours put something up on Facebook the other day, or maybe it's yesterday. And I don't know what prompted this, because he's always making statements that I'm not sure where they come from, but I don't know what prompted this, but he basically said cultural appropriation is not a thing, you know, and he went on to say a few other things about it, but he basically said cultural appropriation is not a thing. Stop whining about it. And I had to comment and I was like, well, cultural appropriation is actually a thing. Like it's an actual defined term and it's a thing that happens. The question you're really asking is it that big of a deal? You know, is it that big of a deal that we appropriate other cultures? Now let's define cultural appropriation first. You know, Brian, How just when you hear that term, what does it make you think?
The first thing I think is when you have a person not of a culture assuming the mannerisms or adopting a culture and then somehow benefiting from that when they shouldn't. That's, to me, that's, you know, if you're just a fan of, say, Native American culture and you happen to enjoy their jewelry or whatnot, that's one thing. But I think, as you mentioned, we were talking earlier, if you're using a culture completely not your own to benefit financially or status-wise or whatever, that's got to be wrong in about every way.
Yeah, and I think to add to that, there can be an homage like to another culture, you know, in your own artwork, in your own things that you're selling, something like that.
Inspired by, right?
But you've got to acknowledge the roots of that thing, and I think that's the real problem here. Is seeing, you know, gift shops, things like that, people selling stuff that is based on, that's, if you look at it and you say, oh, that looks Japanese, or you look at it, oh, that looks Native American in some, which is a really like racist thing to say because there's so many Native American cultures. You can't just say that looks Native American. Yeah. You got to qualify that. You know, that looks Paiute, that looks Anasazi, that looks Aztec, you know, something like that. Those are some of the more popular ones. You see that all the time. People wearing like the Aztec geometric designs. Now, here's the thing too. The Aztec didn't invent geometric designs. You know what I mean?
Nor fabric or patterns.
No, but things can be clearly, like if they used it for long enough and their culture is defined by that, then it can be seen as somewhat belonging to them culturally. But again, the question is, are you honoring them or are you, I guess, not honoring them by using that culture in a way that you profit from? And it doesn't have to necessarily even be profit. It can be, you know, you see tribal tattoos and things like that. But then that's a point where I think cultural appropriation is not necessarily a bad thing. People see the same, or maybe they ascribe new spiritual meaning towards certain tattoos and shapes and things like that they want to put on their own body, and they have their own meaning, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, I think it can be instructive in some ways, you know.
Well, maybe I'm wrong here, but now I'm thinking that pretty much every religion celebrated is cultural appropriation. All of Christianity, anyone that's in the U.S., did we not straight take a culture and take a belief system from a completely separate place in the world and go, this is ours now?
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
Yeah, Christianity is basically a mix of cultural appropriation.
Right.
You know,
and then a bunch of white people decide, well, a whole bunch of people, but let's just start from the start. A bunch of white people then took it over and said, this is ours now.
Yeah.
You know, we own this now.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's what people think about, I guess.
Yeah, indeed. I'm trying to think of other signs of like clear signs of cultural appropriation that we can think of. I think some of them are, well, definitely clothing we talked about. Mm-hmm. But I just read an article about the Miss India pageant or whatever. They put out a photograph of, I don't know, the winners or contestants, or I guess the contestants from this year's contest. And they all basically look European. Like, there's a whole skin lightening thing that is really the fad. And people are saying, people in India are saying, well, is it actually a skin? Like are people doing that because they want to? Or are the judges picking people who look more European because they're saying this is the standard of beauty here?
People are adapting their strategy to win based on what the judges are rewarding.
Exactly. And I don't know if that's really cultural appropriation or is it racial appropriation. I'm not really sure. But the dress styles and everything, you know, we're very European and not Indian, you know. And some people are saying that's a... that's a huge problem.
I don't know, though. Maybe when your country has been dominated by England for however long, maybe that is part of their culture as well.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to say. I think when it comes down to things like that, it's an interesting inflection point at which an entire culture is appropriating another culture through one thing or another, and then it becomes part of the culture that did the appropriating. Now, when does it become cultural appropriation again? You know what I mean? I take the example of any civilization or country or whatever that has conquered another and then moved in. You know, is that a lot of times, like the Romans, and as a really good example, would absorb. You know, they would absorb the culture. I'm not saying it's a good thing, but that's just a fact. They would absorb the culture of the people they took in. And you know, certain things from Roman society would come into the culture they took over and vice versa.
Sure. Well, you see that exactly with India and England, too. Mm-hmm. You go to England, you get some of the best Indian food you've ever had in your life.
Sure.
You know, I'm sure if you go to India, you're going to find a lot of British culture, whether or not they still want it. Again, you're going to find some stuff that was influenced because of history.
Yeah.
Right? Just because of the way things were. Yeah. And I heard that whole skin lightening thing, that's really big in China and Japan as well, too.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah. But again, is it a bad thing? If it's making people happy, it's what they want to do.
It's their body. If they want to do it, if they're being kind of coerced into doing it, that's not that great.
Right. If you're being offered jobs or something because you've got lighter skin, or if you're being given certain things because you've got lighter skin, that's obviously going to be an issue because it's being racist against people without lighter skin. Right, I mean, just basic racism. So I don't know. It's a very interesting thing. And I mean, talking about Indian food in England, I mean, England is practically known for its curry.
Oh yeah. Well, you can get, Indian food, Pakistani food. I mean, just Thai food. I don't know how that really plays in, but cause if I knew more history, I probably would know how that ties in, but some of the best Thai food I've ever had was in London.
Yeah.
And not in some big fancy restaurant, but just literally a restaurant above a pub.
Right.
It's like, how is it better here? Mm-hmm. Your food's not supposed to be good here.
Well, and let's talk about when that becomes cultural appropriation. So if you go to a Chinese restaurant here in Reno, run by Chinese people or Asians, that's not cultural appropriation. That's you know, a culture bringing in their food into another territory.
Right.
But if America becomes known as the hub of Chinese food, like General Tso's chicken becomes like an American thing, that is cultural appropriation. Right. Again, is it a bad thing? Yeah, maybe, maybe not. You know, if we're stealing that wholeheartedly from another culture and saying it's ours and we've done it better all along, then yeah, that's probably cultural appropriation. Yeah. But
plus, I think it'd probably look bad if I, as a middle-aged white guy, go open a Chinese restaurant and dress in traditional, like not even traditional Chinese but like medieval sure. or feudal Chinese garb, and then right. spoke with some accent that clearly doesn't belong to me, I should probably be shut down.
Probably.
You know, yeah. I shouldn't be allowed to exist as a business there.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd probably be a bad thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I don't know. I don't know where you should draw the line. I think on its face value, if you want to know whether or not cultural appropriation is going on, then you just look at, and it often relates to storefronts and stores and like people selling things. Mm-hmm. That's usually where you get most of the heat from it. But I would say if you think you see that happening, you know, just go in and have a chat with the owner and say, hey, where did you, what inspired you to create all these things? You know, mm. where did you get this idea or something like that? Mm. And ask them about it. I do that in Virginia City all the time. It's not cultural appropriation, but it makes me think about it. Mm. They sell artifacts, basically bottles and cans and things like that, that the minute you start questioning people from, they say, oh, this was all taken off of private land, because they know where that questioning is mm-hmm, coming from. Mm-hmm. And if you take anything off of a private land, you can do whatever you want with it. Mm-hmm. But if they're digging around in mine sites out in backcountry Nevada and they're pulling up these bottles and cans, there's a reason when we find on an archaeological site and we record it for the first time, we find very few whole artifacts and whole bottles. Mm. Because we're only sent out there when something is going to happen to that area. But it's not hard to find old mines on a topo map. They're mm-hmm. labeled right on there. And when you go to the old mine on the topo map, you'll know right away whether or not it's probably been looted, right? Because there's no whole things left. People didn't just break stuff when they left, you know, for bottles and cans. They mm-hmm. they threw them into trash piles and they reused them and they did different things. Somebody just put up a picture on some Instagram or something the other day of a milk can. They've got a very specific look to them, like an evaporated milk can mm-hmm. that had wire wrapped around it on the top and bottom and a handle. They basically made like a coffee mug out of it, mm-hmm. which is pretty cool. Although drinking coffee out of a metal can, hopefully it wasn't rusty yet. That'd be pretty gross. But anyway.
People were tougher back then, you know? And they died a lot earlier.
Does that make them tougher?
Well, I guess in the short term, right?
I don't see dying early as toughness. I don't know.
They used up all their life being tough in a condensed manner.
That's right. That's right. All right. So let me put up the phone number one more time, 775-515-4141 for all your questions related to archaeology. Or I'm curious if anybody has any examples they can think of cultural appropriation or anything else we've talked about that they've seen nearby. So anyway, let's bring up that article a little bit more. We're kind of jumping back and forth here, but I think it all ties in, to be honest. Mm-hmm. You know, talking about Jerusalem's history and Palestine's history. I don't know if there's ever going to be an answer to that question. You know, they're just mm-hmm. continuously fighting over land. And the problem is, I mean, they all believe that they've been given by divine right mm-hmm. the land, but they're trying to prove divine right through physical artifacts.
Right. Which, my stuff is here, therefore, surely it was ours, right?
Right.
The people never traveled or anything.
No. And how do you even define, like my stuff? You know, it's a really right. weird thing to say.
And you know? Just for background for people listening, in the article, it was saying that, to your point, that people were going in and saying, oh, look, clearly this is Jewish land because we're finding Jewish artifacts. But then it was also going to say that people were going in, finding a site, and literally giving that site a narrative that fits their story mm-hmm. and totally omitting what it may have actually been. So I don't know if we're even talking cultural appropriation as much as cultural destruction.
Yeah.
Because you're just eliminating that other story because it doesn't fit with your ideology, right? Oh, this Jews lived here and Palestinians lived here and then Muslims were here and Christians were here. But if you just rewrite the story on all those artifacts to support you, you've now just destroyed. You've mm-hmm. eliminated those cultures, well, their history, and long enough, you've eliminated them.
Yeah.
You know.
Which happens a lot. Mm. You know, we anytime we see a war or a society that is less than thrilled with their, you know, political leadership or something like that, we see the destruction of the iconography of that civilization, you know, time and time again.
Oh, sure.
And then we're left with very little to actually know. If it weren't for historians and written record and things like that, then there's a lot of things we just simply wouldn't know about. I mean, look at World War II and the toppling of statues of Mussolini and things mm-hmm. like that. You know, Germany, Russia, I mean, throne statues of Stalin. Now, I'm very curious. I wish we as a people could stay a little less emotional about that stuff, just from a historical standpoint, mm-hmm. because, yes, we should take these down because we don't want an 80-foot tall statue of Stalin anymore. Mm-hmm. However, let's put it somewhere and just kind of remember it, you know, remember the what it stood for, and, sure. and remember so we don't repeat those mistakes.
Yeah, remember, you know? This guy, he was a jerk. Don't do that.
Exactly, exactly. It's like when I was in the South, living in South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, one of the things that really kind of floored me down there were the, I guess, I don't know if they were memorials or I guess honoring the fallen dead from the Civil War mm-hmm. in these Southern towns. Mm-hmm. So they're honoring Confederate soldiers, mm-hmm. right? Now, I don't have a problem with that on face value, right? If this memorial was put up in the 1860s or the 1870s or even the 1880s, you know, during the whole Reconstruction period, then great. I mean, half of your town is dead. Let's mm-hmm. go ahead and remember them, whether they were on the right side or not, right? I mean, they're all dead. But when I would go through these towns where there were monuments put up 10 years ago mm-hmm. to the Confederate dead, it's like that's going a little beyond, you know, what we need to be talking about here. That's a little bit like, let's let it go now and move on.
Yeah, that's
you lost.
That's not preserved. Because you're right. The people living at the time fighting the wars in those cities mm-hmm. believed they were right just as much as everyone on the other side of the war.
Sure.
Right? So they didn't think or believe, not all of them, thought that they were doing anything wrong at all. And they were, in fact, being, you know, having aggression, northern mm-hmm. aggression on them. So, of course, they're going to put monuments up back then.
Yes.
Right. But like you said, they lost. some of us have grown mm-hmm. to know that what was going on back then wasn't right. And so, yeah, you build one now that you're racist. Sorry.
It's kind of missing the point. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yes. You could say it's our culture from stuff from back then.
Yeah.
But you can't say my culture from stuff that you just made. Come
sure.
on.
Sure. And, you know, Confederate memorials, like if the South ever did, like if a small town in the South did wholeheartedly somewhat change its opinion through time mm-hmm. over how they view past in the history, I mean, the South will rise again is a pretty common phrase. Yeah. So I don't think they're over it.
Yeah, but every time a Democrat wins, right?
Right. So, but if a town or a region did just wholeheartedly say, you know what, that past is really messed up. You know, we really shouldn't be observing that. We need to learn from it, but that's what museums are for. Mm-hmm. So if you want to take down the memorial, don't do it with fire and a bulldozer. Mm-hmm. You know, take down the memorial, or I don't even want to say repurpose it, because you don't want to change it. You still have to understand what these people went through so we can learn from that and move on. But put it in a museum or mm-hmm. make it some kind of park, you know, and put other Civil War memorabilia in there or something mm-hmm. like that. But call it for what it is, a history lesson.
Right. And I hate to say what I'm about to say after you just said a park, but like they have the Civil War prison of war camps
yeah.
that you can still go visit and see how horrible we were to each other.
Right.
And it's all – and there's videos and like – so yeah, we were both in the military. I've been deployed. I'd like to think that I could see stuff and be a little hardened to it. Mm-hmm. But they've got the videos of us putting us – in the same situations as Nazi Germany internment yeah. camps or us putting Asian Americans, Japanese people in internment camps of what we did to them mm-hmm. and how you could walk through there and be the same person at the other end is beyond me.
Yeah.
So you're right. You keep that stuff, but you frame it in the right way and say, we used to be this way. We've grown. Look at this. We don't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. We hope, you know? So yeah, you're right. You tear it down. You lose the training value, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's I mean, to me, that, like you said, that's exactly what museums are for. History lessons, mm-hmm. you know, learn from that stuff and don't forget it. I mean, we don't need to dwell on it all the time. If you want to go see it, then you can learn from it and it's right there and we can attempt to move on. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
You may have heard my pitch for membership. It's a great idea and really helps out. However, you can also support us by picking up a fun t-shirt, sticker, or something from a large selection of items from our Tee Public store. Head over to arcpodnet.com/shop for a link. That's arcpodnet.com/shop to pick up some fun swag and support the show.
let's take a quick second here. I want to talk, because my wife and I just binged the 6 episodes that they have on Netflix. Historical Roast. Have you seen that?
I have not.
Oh, my God. It's this comedian, Jeff Ross, who they dress up. They bring on a figure. The first episode, I believe, is Abraham Lincoln, and played by Bob Saget. And he comes up. And the people that are roasting him are not only Jeff Ross, but Mary Todd Lincoln was one of them. And, oh, man, I'm totally forgetting. Oh, John Wilkes Booth.
Sure.
Of course. And who was the third one? There was a third one that was roasting him, and I can't remember who it was. But it is super funny. I mean, it's a shame that we have to learn some of our history from stuff like this, but then again, not so much, because I'd rather learn history in a humorous way that's going to make me remember it.
Sure.
You know,
then. Do you know how much I've learned off drunk history? I mean, yeah. I do go back and check. I'm like, for real? That's how the land grab really occurred? Like, really? Yeah. And so, yeah, it does make you go back and be like, oh, wow, okay, cool. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing. Yeah. If that's a bad thing, then what is it? I think Amazon just basically made picking and packing a video game.
What is that?
So, you know, when you have order to fill, right? You put in your order for Prime.
Right.
They go pick your order out of all the racks or whatnot.
Yeah.
Well, I was reading this article where now it's basically tracking your body motion. And of course, every business that does this tracks accuracy, pick accuracy and speed, right? I need these three things. Did you get me those three things that I asked for, and how fast did you do it?
Yeah.
Well, because of society and how we are now, they're basically tracking arm movement, body movement, and your pick and accuracy, and giving people points. You can see your points rack up, you could level up. So at first you're like, oh, this is silliness. But what if you did base a company that way, where you got promoted based on pure metrics of look, here's my, I leveled up.
Yeah.
I scored 15 million points. Yeah. It's time for me to be the boss. Like in this department. So I think that is a new way of training to make it fun, humorous, and memorable.
I mean, subconsciously, you're really just talking about The Last Starfighter. Like, we all want to play a video game and then be called up to save the galaxy.
Yeah. You're like, Brian, we've noticed you've logged 2,000 hours of Grand Theft Auto, and we need someone to do some business downtown.
Right. You're like the best qualified.
Right.
Yeah. Here's a car. Yeah, there you go. Nice. Anyway, historical roast is really good. Definitely check that out on Netflix. You know, along those lines, in presenting history and archaeology in fun ways that people will remember, I hope some people remember the one time you and I did a historical comedy science show, actually at the Reno Collective, almost a year ago. Was it June or July or something like that last year? Whatever it was. It was almost a year ago, and I'd love to do something like that again. It was really just logistically hard to pull together. I didn't have the time to, you know, figure out topics, other guests, things like that. But I would love to be a person who participates in that kind of thing, but doesn't have to put it all together every time.
Yeah, right.
as you know.
Yeah, I like the part where you just show up.
Right.
And try to say stuff that are funny.
Yeah, we called it The Funny Thing About Science, and it was, I think it's supposed to be an hour, and we almost went, like, almost 2 hours, I think.
Yeah, and the six people that were there loved it.
Hey, my wife counts, I think there were 7.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah. So I'd love to do another thing like that again, and before I forget, we mentioned this last week, and now the information is out there, but why don't you tell everybody about your comedy show coming up in June up in Wingfield Springs?
Oh, yeah. So June 20th, I have the second service of the First Church of the Capital C, which is a comedy show that we are holding out at Red Hawk Golf Course out in Sparks, or Spanish Springs, if you will. And that show will start at 8 p.m. It'll go to 9:30. I've got 3 comics plus myself. Headliner is going to be Johnny Taylor Jr. He'd probably appreciate it if I pronounce his name correctly. He's out of L.A., I believe. And we've got Becky Lins, a comedian out of Sacramento. And then we've got a local comic, Pat Shillito. You've seen him host the open mics, and he's at Laugh Factory quite a bit.
Nice.
And I'm actually getting him. He's moving out of town, so I may be the last time he's on stage in Reno for a while.
Yeah.
And then I'll be hosting. So tickets for general admission are $20. VIP is $40. Last time, everyone had a great time. The comics loved it. The people working there loved it. More importantly, the audience loved it. So, assuming a bigger turnout this time, but yeah, once a month, I figure people should come out.
Are there free appetizers again?
There are not. And there wasn't last time either.
Oh, my.
Yes. That was One of the fun things that I learned as a comedy producer is that when you get to your show, little stuff like that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So this time, no appetizers. There is a bar that's not free.
Mm-hmm.
But come in. General admission, you can sit where you want. VIP, you can sit where you want within VIP. That comes with a dedicated wait staff and some tables.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, general admission are just comfy seats.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be a great show. My headliner, my feature, this is what they do for a living every day. Well, as often as they can.
Yeah.
And we're hoping to do it once a month on Thursdays. But definitely people need to come to this show.
Well, maybe we need to have another resurgence when you get this thing going of the funny thing about science. Because I can envision getting up there and asking comedians basic science questions and see what kind of answers they give.
See what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you may be surprised, you may not be surprised, but a lot of comics are at least fairly intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the good ones.
Yeah.
In order to put the premise together and create a clever mental twist for the audience and all that. So,
sure.
I've been really surprised a few times where you hear someone's material and you're like, all right, probably like IQ of like 80, right? Which is not horrible.
Yeah.
You know, could be better.
Yeah.
But then suddenly they just know all that, and you're like, whoa, where did this come from? And then you find out that they were a person before.
Sure.
You know, being a comic.
Yeah.
So yeah, it might be a really good time.
I don't know if I don't know if this person exists out there. Hopefully they do. But when you look at like Bill Nye the Science Guy and Neil deGrasse Tyson, you know, people who manage to put a humorous yet intelligent spin on things, we need that for archaeology.
Mm-hmm.
We really do. We need somebody to be that face of archaeology. Because even just the other day, a friend of mine was telling me that he met somebody and he said they said, oh, you know, what do you do? And he's like, oh, I'm an archaeologist. And they go, oh, so you study dinosaurs? He's like, no, that's paleontologist. And he's like, oh, right. Well, my dad was a geologist too. And I'm like, that whole sentence is just yeah. Like none of that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
oh, you're a doctor. My brother's a hygienist. That's cool. His friend's an X-ray tech.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, we got a comment in from a listener named Rachel in Reno. And she said, regarding cultural appropriation, she said there was a war in the crafting community about cultural appropriation of clothing types and names, particularly over the kimono. I said, most people don't know the history behind it, and it was used totally incorrectly.
Huh.
So that's part of cultural appropriation, though, is using something from another culture and using it in a completely different way that might actually be disrespecting it.
Mm-hmm.
But even if it's not, if you're not acknowledging or using it in the way that it was intended, you know. But then again, we see stuff like rednecks racing school buses around a demo derby track or something like that. Is that cultural appropriation?
Well, and then let me be really ignorant too and be absurd on the other side. So when people dress up as sexy nurses, are regular nurses supposed to be all upset about that?
Right.
You know, we're a serious profession. Yes, you are. I want to see a sexy version of it. Find me a sexy safety professional. I'll look at that too. That's fine.
Right.
But is it really cultural appropriation, or is it one night of dressing up like something? Now, your kimono thing, that's a completely different example, than what I'm talking about. But people do go that far. Oh, your little girl's dressed up like a mermaid. You don't know the last city of Atlantis really didn't appreciate that.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
You know, at some point. But then again, I'm a middle-aged white guy. So, I mean, do I get to have an opinion on that? Probably not.
Well, and this goes back to our middle-aged white guy friend who said cultural appropriation does not exist. And, you know, he's always saying stuff like, what is it, the PC squad, you know, something like that, political correctness. Stuff like that really gets him going, right? Really gets him fired up. And for the most part, I tend to agree with him in a lot of things. But when it comes down to something like cultural appropriation, it's all about knowledge and understanding and really knowing what it is and when it's a problem and when it's not, you know, because Halloween, we're appropriating literally every culture on the planet, including dead ones, right? Zombie culture is being appropriated on Halloween. So in that context, is it cultural appropriation? No, but if you're wearing, you know, I don't know, if you're wearing a kimono improperly and you're doing something that you probably shouldn't be and saying, oh, look at me, I'm, you know, Japanese or something, that's cultural appropriation in a bad way, you know? So, I don't know. Hipsters are always doing it too. Cultural appropriation.
Yeah.
It's always a hipster thing.
I don't know though. If I grow enough facial hair, am I appropriating their culture?
I know, probably. Luckily, I don't have that problem.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not growing any facial hair anytime soon. All right. Well, we've got about 10, 11 minutes left. Let me put the phone number out one more time, 775-515-4141. Again, call in to tell me and to tell Brian and myself, you know, how much full of crap we are and that your Aztec design store is totally legit and you have every right to do that. I'm not saying you don't. No, I'm not saying you don't.
I'm sure that they're at least one 128th Cherokee or something, right?
That's how that works. Yeah. There was something talked about in the archaeological community based on that. It went around. I can't remember what podcast we discussed this on. It wasn't even one that I do. It was one of the shows on the Archaeology Podcast Network. But one of the hosts brought up the it was something like 23andMe, one of their, or maybe it was Ancestry or something. One of those things where they have a commercial where somebody found out a bunch of stuff about their history. And it was this, like, clearly white woman, right, standing there. And she's wearing, like, some kind of Native American, like, burlap thing or whatever, and or canvas thing. And there's, like, Pier 1 pots behind her on this, like, display.
Handcrafted from the people, the Native people.
Right.
Pier 1.
Right. She's like, wow, you know, I went on whatever site this was, and it was like, I found out I had this whole history I didn't even know, and I'm like 1/16th, whatever the hell.
Yeah.
It's like, that doesn't make you that that ethnicity or race or heritage.
Yeah, the next sentence was, and now I'm applying for a whole bunch of, you know, student loans or whatever. Yeah. Grants,
exactly.
You know, yeah, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, every white guy in America or every white person in America says they're Native American, right?
Right, right.
When it comes to my great-grandfather's mother was full-blooded, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Sure.
I know. I'm probably the only one that didn't do that in college. I mean, I've got naturally darker skin, you know, not just pure white. It's always got kind of a little brown tint to it. And there's a good chance I got something in my background, but I literally don't know what it is. And honestly, I don't really care that much, you know. Like, I am who I am, and I know who my parents are. I know who my grandparents are. That's far enough. You know, that's good enough for me. I don't need to know that I've got some thing way back in the distance, you know. Or and I don't think it's Native American, honestly, because I think it came from my grandfather's side on my mom's father's side, which comes from Germany and that whole area. So who knows who was even over there, you know. And my grandfather had a little bit darker skin as well. Not, like, dark skin by any means. You know, still clearly white, but just tinted darker, like you got a year-long tan kind of thing.
Sure.
You know, so and I caution people against things like 23andMe and Ancestry.com. First off, they're not 100% accurate, but people are looking at these things going, oh, this is, you know, the gospel, this is exactly my heritage right here. And it's like, okay, it's probably close, you know. There are some things in there, and but it doesn't change whatever the results are. It doesn't change who you are.
Right, and you know, if it were super accurate and you go back far enough, we're all
African.
Yeah, I mean, we're all go back far enough. No matter if you believe it's religion or if you just believe science, the cradle of life, like, yeah, we all came from one place. What is the point?
Yeah.
But I do think it should be mandatory for all white supremacists. They should all have to do it. And then that immediately eradicates white supremacy.
Right.
Because no one's going to be purely Aryan or... You know what I mean? So like, oh, well, but then cognitive dissonance. So they'd be like, oh,
sure.
Science is fake.
I mean, you know, some of them have done it. They must have.
Well, yeah, there's been stories. They'd be like, I'm pure. Oh, no.
Right. Right. It's like that Flat Earth documentary on Netflix. I don't know if you've seen that one.
No.
Oh, it's amazing. It's an amazing documentary just from a pure science standpoint. It's and right at the very end, this one guy who's been in it throughout the whole most of the show, and he's a well outspoken person on, like, his YouTube channel and podcasts and things like that about Flat Earth. And they were conducting this experiment for, like, the second or third time in the show. Like, they had to set it up a few times because the first two were inconclusive.
Oh, sure.
Right. Right. There must have been some issue. Right. And then the third time it's right at the end of the show, and it was perfect from an editing standpoint. They're, like, basically trying to line up this light across this long distance and trying to see it should shine exactly through this hole set up on the other side. And they're like, I can't see the light, because they're looking through the hole on the other end. It's like, I can't see the light. I can't see the light. Oh, there must be an issue. And then the guy, like, holds it up over his head I can see it. Oh, and it cuts to credits.
This is bad editing.
Yeah, it's just.
Could you have at least left some doubt? Like,
I know.
Like, so, my father-in-law, again, I don't know if he could listen to this or not, but he loves watching all of those, like, hidden treasure, you know, shows and Ancient Aliens and all that stuff. And yeah, he was watching one on these guys that basically sold everything and just put millions of dollars into finding this sunken treasure.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm going to ruin this. You know they don't find it. You know they don't find it. Why? Because you would have already heard about it. There would never been a TV show because they would have got their fame from finding it and then doing whatever, selling it or becoming. They wouldn't have had to create a TV show. They only created it because they didn't actually find it.
Yeah.
And they never find it.
No. Yeah.
It started with Geraldo and the whole.
Oh, what's his
Jimmy
name?
Hoffa's,
safe.
Or Al Capone's vault.
Al Capone's vault.
Yeah. And you're all, yes, nope. And then just that set of precedents for just shows hoping you're going to, you know, you're going to get this reveal and nope.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, my sort of final thoughts on cultural appropriation, too. It's not just Native American culture. It's not just Asian cultures, things like that. Things that are, I hate to say it, relatively easy for us to appropriate and obvious because they're so different than, I guess, I don't know if there is a normal American culture, you know, but the Gap culture, let's just put it that way, you know, the old Navy Gap kind of thing. I would say that's more noticeably American across the country, that sort of style. So if you're wearing anything else from a clothing standpoint, you know, somebody's going to say it's cultural appropriation, but you just got to do it in like the right way. Like my, one of my old professors from, University of North Dakota, she studies textiles and almost universally wears, like Native American style and South American and Central American style textiles. Mm-hmm. You know, she wears those patterns constantly, but she's an anthropology professor, you know, she's an archaeologist. Is that cultural appropriation or is that honoring the cultures that she's studying, you know, by wearing those clothes? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. It's not like she's washing her car with them. You know, right. That would be dishonoring them.
And I think kind of like what you were saying, if you were doing all this and you have no knowledge of the history or the culture or any of that, you just think it looks neat. Yeah, that's kind of rude.
Yeah, it is a little bit. Yeah. So anyway, I don't know. We do have a... we do have a guest coming on in a couple weeks, so be sure to tune in for that. He's going to be talking to us about a recent discovery in Alaska that they just talked about. His name is Gerard Smith, and they found a prehistoric human footprint from the interior of Alaska. In 2017, they actually originally wrote about this, but it's just coming back into the news now. And I actually saw a press release from the University of Alaska, which was so weird. And I contacted him and said, yeah, let's do this. So on the 21st of June, we're going to have him, obviously not in the studio, but on the phone and talking. So if you're interested in prehistory in Alaska, they said that the radiocarbon, they found a buried house pit in association and some cache pits, which means like tools and things like that. And they did some radiocarbon dating to around 1900 BP, so before present, which means, you know, somewhere around 100 AD, give or take. So that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. It's not like super early, but it's still, we don't have a lot of footprints and things like that found in association with other things in that area. And so
where was this located?
Alaska.
Like super North Alaska?
I don't know. We'll find out. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Talk to him about it. So yeah,
I was just watching, what was it? Our Planet. And about the boreal forest.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, yeah, nothing can live out here.
Right.
Very, very few things can live out here. So if it is that far north, then they found something that would be super cool.
That would be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. The boreal forest is another amazing thing, too, because it spans the entire planet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I just found that out.
I found that out a few years ago when somebody told me about it. And I was like, what is this thing? You know?
Well, I was like, wait, so there's a forest in Russia, and yet we have a snow park called Boreal. What? Oh, same thing.
Yeah. And it's in a forest, actually. Yeah. So that's not quite. Yeah. All right. So anyway, tune in for that. Again, we're going to be back next week. I have no idea what we're going to talk about, but hopefully Brian can join me on this. And definitely check out his comedy show. I don't think we mentioned where they can find tickets for that. There's a Facebook page, I think.
You can go to First Church of the Capital C on Facebook or look it up on Eventbrite under Laugh Out Loud Stand-Up Comedy Show.
Laugh Out Loud Stand-Up Comedy Show. Mm-hmm. Nice.
In Sparks.
Yeah, so you don't have to worry about parking.
Nope.
It's free.
Free
and lots of it.
Yeah.
Free and plentiful.
Free and plentiful. And it's probably the most beautiful venue for comedy you've been to in the city.
Yeah, it's not stinky. It doesn't smell like the city. It's going to be great.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, thanks a lot, Brian. All and again, check out arcpodnet.com/archaeology for recordings of this show. We just drop them right there as a podcast. They release every other Saturday. We also have new interviews on there as well, so it's not just recordings of this show. I've got some stuff coming up that's going to be pretty great. I don't have the interview scheduled yet, so I'm not going to mention them, but I've been talking to some people, and we've got some new interviews coming down the line. And also check out, if you're interested in archaeology in general, we have stuff on technology, on the business of archaeology, on Heritage Voices is one about Native Americans and talking to Native Americans about their experiences in archaeology and with their cultures and what they do. Just some really fascinating stuff. So check out all this stuff at arcpodnet.com. And of course, don't forget to check out all the other shows here at KNVC 95.1 FM, Carson Community Media. And you can find that at knvc.org. You can listen here at knvc.org/listen-live. Thanks again, Brian.
Thank you.
And thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Archaeology Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. You can provide feedback using the contact button on the right side of the website at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/archaeology. Or you can email Chris at archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Please like and share the show wherever you saw it so more people can have a chance to listen and learn. Send us show suggestions and follow ArcPodNet on Twitter and Instagram. This show is produced by the Archaeology Podcast Network. Opinions are solely those of the hosts and guests of the show. However, the APN stands by their hosts. Special thanks to the band Sea Hero for letting us use their song, I Wish You'd Look. Check out their albums on Bandcamp at seahero.bandcamp.com. Check out our next episode in 2 weeks. And in the meantime, keep learning, keep discovering new things, and keep listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network. Have an awesome day. This show is produced and recorded by the Archaeology Podcast Network, Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle, in Reno, Nevada, at the Reno Collective.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
Thanks again for listening to this episode and for supporting the Archaeology Podcast Network. If you want these shows to keep going, consider becoming a member for just $7.99 US dollars a month. That's cheaper than a venti quad eggnog latte. Go to archpodnet.com/members for more info.